Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Welcome to Sugar-Coated Murder Podcast, a brilliant true crime podcast hosted by two zany sisters, all while baking up delicious treats in their kitchen. Here are your podcast hosts, Karen Devaney and Ann Varner.
Well, I do believe this microphone is on.
Wow. Yeah. I love it when we start out with the microphone on.
So nice.
I'm just calling it a microwave.
A microwave? No, we don't speak into the microwave.
That is a possibility for future.
To speak into the microwave?
We might. You never know.
That's right before they take us to the home.
To the Betty.
I think that's right before they drop us at the Betty, girl. And you know they're not going to pack well for me.
No,
they're not going to pack well at all. I'm going to have like three socks. Not to be fair. Three socks.
Yes.
Yeah, and a pair of underwear and some random things I've never seen before.
I don't know if you're getting underwear. They've been known to take
away. They've been known to take my underwear away from me. So, yeah, please just don't go to the Betty right now.
Okay.
I'm just not ready. I'm not ready for the Betty.
Okay, so we're back and it's your turn to bake. What are you baking?
Well, I did a no bake today.
A no bake.
I did.
I love
baked tiramisu.
Oh, I love a tiramisu. You know, I love a good tiramisu.
A tiramisu.
A tiramisu.
Terry, me, and Sue all went to the bakery and got some tiramisu. Anywho, with the tiramisu.
No, Lord.
It's from a website called Tastes Better From Scratch.
Nice.
Yeah. And I mean, it's got all the good stuff in it. Heavy whipping cream, mascarpone cheese, sugar, killer vanilla, cold espresso, coffee flavor liqueur, aka
Kahlua.
Some lady fingers that you dip in and you know, you dredge them through. Oh,
I love a dip in.
And cocoa powder on the tops. That's what I did.
Oh,
and it's layered and it's in a little pan and it's in the fridge chilling like a villain.
I'm excited.
I know. Me too. Me too. Me too for the tiramisu.
Me too, Sue.
Do you think maybe Dr. Seuss missed an opportunity to do a book about tiramisu?
I think it was probably in the works.
I feel like it's very easy to rhyme.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah, and he could have said, Terry, me, and Sue went into a bakery and walked out with tiramisu.
That's right.
Right. I mean,
you know, we're pronouncing it wrong. I'm sure there's some sweet Italian way to do it.
Probably. I'm going to look it up on my phone. Tiramisu. I almost choked on my own tongue. It's also known as a Tuscan trifle. I never knew that.
Oh.
So I did not make a tiramisu today. I have made a Tuscan trifle.
Alexa, what's another name for a Tuscan trifle?
A Tuscan trifle, also known as tiramisu, is a
tiramisu
that originated in the region of
Tuscany. Okay, all right.
Stop it. Alexa, cut it.
Good heavens.
I'm not sure about that.
Oh.
Okay, well, you know what?
You need to pipe down.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying. And don't you backtalk me. I'll plug you.
Wow with the attitude.
Golly.
Wow. She is something.
I'm serious.
Between your gossip and
he's always impatient.
Oh my gosh. And her with the attitude.
With the I'm gonna give you 10 times the information that you asked for.
Yes, thank you for making
because I'm a know it all
about the tiramisu.
Tiramisu.
We just eat it. We don't care how you say it.
I really don't. I'm just gonna put it in my mouth.
That's right. All right.
Well, so, do you got anything to talk about?
I do. I really, really do.
Okay. That's our show. Goodbye, everybody.
Goodbye. I'm going to eat the tiramisu. Oh, my goodness. I'm going to tell you a story. This is a story that takes place at the Iowa State Fair.
Oh, wow.
What? Oh, my God. Back in August of 1996.
96. It must be a significant number for us.
It's a number.
It must be a number. Oh, my God.
Marilyn and Bobby Bluer. Not Brewer, but Bluer.
Like I'm bluer than you?
Yeah, only not the color. It's like Brewer, but with an L.
I blew her.
No, it's hair. Just their last name. No, don't even.
I think I just stepped into some detail.
They had a very, very successful funnel cake business.
Oh, I love a funnel
called Flory's Funnel Cakes.
That's so fun.
I know. They ran the business out of a food trailer. It was real cute. It was red with gold letters and it had wagon wheels on it.
Cute.
Just very fair-like, right? And they would go from fair to fair, like usually start around September to June or June. No, wait, June to September.
Okay. And yeah, September to June, you wouldn't get a lot of business.
No, they'd go June to September. They had regular jobs, too. They would go out on the fair circuit.
Okay.
With their, and it was a very lucrative business.
I can imagine.
But one of the big events that they were part of was the Iowa State Fair. When the Bluers traveled to these different fairs, you know, they had their trailer, and they had converted a big bus, like a charter bus.
Okay.
Into a motorhome.
Oh, that's so fun.
They outfitted it with a bed and a dining room table. Just real comfy.
Like a camper.
Like smushed, very smushed, tight quarters. But they had a family. They had a boy named Bo and two girls. Jamie was the oldest and Jada was the youngest.
Okay.
And the kids usually traveled with them when they went around on the circuit. It's like a rite of passage for them. When they got old enough, they got to go out on the circuit and work.
Yeah.
They really enjoyed it as a family. The Bluers had been in the funnel cake business since the 70s and had earned one of the most coveted spots at the Iowa State Fair.
Wow.
On the grand concourse called the Triangle.
Not the Triangle.
The Triangle.
Get out of here.
I'm telling you. One of the most coveted spots.
Coveted, I'm telling you.
That's where you want to park your truck.
If it's got funnel cakes, yes.
Mm-hmm. Drinking some Bailey's and coffee and it's delicious.
I'm delighted that you're doing that.
business was booming for the Bluers. And on Monday, August the 8th, 1996, they're back at it again. Bo and Jada wake up early and they head over to the funnel cake stand, I like to call it, to get it open and set up for the thousands upon thousands of people that come through the doors. In a day, they could have 70,000 to 80,000 people come to the Iowa State.
That is crazy. That's a lot of people.
It's a lot of
people. And I'm going to tell you something. 9 out of 10 of those people were there for the funnel cake.
Amen that.
Yeah.
Amen that.
Amen that right now.
Amen that.
I just amened it for you.
I'll bust you up if you don't amen it.
You better amen or I'm going to amen you.
Fancy taking a humorous trip down a random topic each week? You do? Well, you're in luck. Casting Views, presented by me, Dan, and a host of guests, bring you just that. With topics from the world of entertainment, science, sport, and everyday life, there's bound to be a topic that's going to inform and amuse. Catch Casting Views every Sunday on all listening platforms now.
Bobby and Marilyn had things to do. Marilyn was trying to get some laundry done because the kids were going back to get ready to start school, and Bobby needed to go. I guess when you earn your money at one of your stands, you got to pay the fare a certain amount of money per day or whatever from your sales. So he was getting ready to go and take that stuff. So the kids went and got everything opened up, ready to go. They knew the drill. So it was not that big of a deal for them to go and do that. That was at 8 o'clock in the morning. And the day kind of moves along and the kids are getting busy. They're just getting real, real busy. And they're kind of starting to wonder where the heck are mom and dad.
Mm-hmm.
Mom and dad hadn't come to help yet, but they knew they had things to do.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and by the way, the sister, Jamie, she was married and had two children. So she did not go to the spare. She stayed home with her small children. So she was not there to help out. But they had hired on a fella that they had met previously at another fair who had done work for some other people. They felt like he was trustworthy. His name is Jeremy Sneed.
Okay.
Jeremy Sneed. And he was 22. He was a ex-felon. So he didn't have a great record, but evidently.
Well, he had a record.
Evidently, people found him to be a good worker.
Okay.
So the Bluers hired him on to help out.
People deserve second chances.
Mm-hmm.
They deserve things.
Mm-hmm.
People deserve
things. And he helped him out at another fair and in July.
Mm-hmm.
And then he shows up at this fair and he's looking for work. And they're like, well, come help us. Where are you staying? And Because I don't have a place to stay. And he said, well, just stay with us. So he stayed with them in the motorhome bus thing, which was the norm. That was didn't seem out of the norm. So Jeremy wasn't there to help with the work. And the mom and dad were not there to, and the line was getting big. So you got Bo, who's 18, and Jada, who I think she's 16.
And they're trying to man that by themselves.
Yes. They're like, what the heck? They've got a line. They're like, where are they? So they talk back and forth with each other on walkie-talkies, which I think is brilliant.
Of course.
And they keep trying to get a hold of mom and dad, but mom and dad aren't picking up. Actually, like at 11 o'clock, Bobby, the dad, called and said, hey, did you remember to do blah, blah, blah? And you're like, yeah, we got it. Mm-hmm. And he was like, okay, we'll see you soon. And then he didn't come. And by 1 o'clock, Bo is beside himself. He's like, we've got to get some help. We're too busy. We've got to come and help us. I'm going to go check and make sure everything is okay. Mm-hmm. So he leaves Jada at the stand and goes, you know, running across because like the parking where the motorhome was, I don't know, maybe half a mile or so from where the stand was.
Okay.
You're not going to park it right next to
it. No, you don't sleep where you start.
No.
No. There's they probably had an area that people like the vendors.
Yeah.
And slept in.
Yes. So he goes running over there and he notices that the door is a little bit open, but he don't really think anything of it because he's 18 and he's in a hurry. Mm-hmm. He does notice that there's a roll of bills on the ground. So he picks that up and walks in. I think probably what Bobby did was instead of, you know, having the bank tape that goes around that says here's a stack of, you know, so many, it's $100 or whatever it got. He probably just rolled his bills because I'm sure, think about all, this is 1996.
Oh, yeah. He probably rolled them and rubber band them.
Yes. Mm-hmm. That would be my guess. It's probably much easier to stack them in a safe than it would be just flat.
Yeah.
And then he could count them out, roll it. He knew this is 100, this is 100, this is 100. Yeah. That's what I envisioned in me mind.
Okay.
He's on the run from the law, falsely accused of murdering his... Wait. Oh, got my scripts mixed up here. Here we go. This makes more sense. The Movie Wire Podcast with host Justin Henson. Hear Justin's movie verdict wherever you listen to podcasts. Tune in to The Movie Wire today.
So he picks up the roll of bills and he walks in. It's pitch dark inside. The blinds are pulled. There are no lights on.
Hmm.
There is a little stream of light coming from where the windshield is
because
it's not completely covered. And he sees his dad laying on the floor.
Oh,
he's like, Dad, like, wake up. You got to come because he's thinking his parents have laid down to take a nap
on the floor.
Yeah.
Okay.
Which, listen, they had to very alternate.
Small.
Yeah. Mom and dad slept in the bed and the Jada and Bo would alternate one on the floor, one on the sofa.
Right.
So
right,
it was
right.
like back and forth. So it probably wasn't that uncommon.
That's
for
true.
Somebody to get stretched out on the floor. So he kicks him with his foot, but his dad doesn't move. And, you know, when you go in from outside into a dark room, you need a minute for your eyes to adjust. Was eyes finally adjust and he notices there's tape across my dad's mouth and there's blood.
Oh no.
So he turns around and runs out and he's screaming, help me, help me, somebody help me. Finds a security guard, says, go to the front gate and get the cops. We need help. There's something happened inside. A security guard runs and gets the police. The police come, they walk in and they find Bobby and Marilyn both dead.
Both of them.
Both of them are dead.
Dang. Yes.
The police keep Bo with them. Of course, Jada still at the stand. She has no idea what's happened. They started to tape off the surrounding area. And the police take Bo to the police station.
Yeah.
And Jada doesn't know what's going on until somebody comes over. And she's like, something terrible has happened to your parents. Like another vendor came in and said, something's happened to your parents. You need to come with me.
Yeah.
So she runs. She's like trying to get him on the walkie-talkie. What's going on? What's going on? Nobody's answering. And she gets over and it's all police taped up and they tell her that her parents are dead.
Oh.
Put her in a police car and take her to the police station. But they keep Bo and Jada separate.
Right.
They can't even see each other. They haven't been able to talk or anything.
Mm-hmm.
They go in and they start talking to Bo. They do a little bit of poking around, but they don't want to do too much until the investigators and the crime scene people get there. But they know enough at this point to know that Bo's truck is missing.
Okay.
His truck is normally parked next to the motorhome. It's gone. There had been around $22,000 in the safe.
Mm-hmm.
The police say that's gone.
Okay.
And Jeremy Snead, the kid that had been hanging with them.
He's gone?
Had been sleeping on the sofa when they left that morning,
mm-hmm.
and he was not there.
Wow. I mean, I don't want to cast suspicion.
No, I can understand.
Yeah.
That you wouldn't.
I wouldn't want to do that against a convicted felon. That's right. Not, I mean, everybody deserves a second chance.
Another interesting tidbit that Bo mentions is he thinks it's weird that his brother-in-law, Rodney, who's Jamie's husband, has shown up a day early to the fair. And that was out of the norm for him.
Oh.
For some reason, he's a rough. And it's like, when I read it, it kind of made me think, all right, there's probably just like a little itch in the back of the detectives.
Yeah.
A little red flag waving back there, but he's not real sure how it fits in.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So they move forward with everything. They put an APB out on the truck and Jeremy.
Where is the son-in-law? He showed up.
Rodney's there. They question Rodney.
Okay.
He's like, what can you tell us about this guy, Jeremy? And he says, Jeremy who?
Oh.
I don't know any Jeremy.
Oh, dear.
Which is really odd because Jeremy had been working for the Bluers for
a couple years.
Yeah. It had been, a few months.
Okay.
So another little red flag is going on in the back of somebody's mind. But they're pressing for it because they know they got to talk to this Jeremy dude. He spells his name Jeremy.
Which is why he went to prison. I mean, honestly, somebody that spells their name like that.
Can we get a copy of the birth certificate to make sure he didn't mess that up?
I mean, seriously, that could be why he went to prison.
It could very
with
well.
A name like that, you got to fight your way out of life.
That's true. I guess you could be, that could be true. They ended up finding Bo's pickup truck pretty quickly. It had been abandoned over at a convenience store. And there was absolutely no sign of Jeremy anywhere for 19 days. No sign.
Damn.
Yeah. But in the meantime, they did do a little bit more investigating on Rodney.
I don't like this Rodney fella. And suddenly, my ankles are up.
Yeah. They went and did some investigating on Rodney. 19 days after the murder, there's a 911 call. And it's a fella, and he is asking the police to please come arrest him, that he's a wanted man.
Oh, dear.
August 31st, 1996, Jeremy Sneed is arrested in Miami, Florida.
He got from Iowa?
He did. He got from Iowa to Florida.
Yeah, Iowa to Florida.
Yes, that's exactly right.
Damn, Jeremy.
Without the truck, because he ditched the truck.
Oh, yeah, he did ditch the truck.
Via bus.
Oh, he got on a bus.
On the Greyhound.
Mm-hmm. How could he afford that?
Maybe the $22,000 he had
in
his pocket.
No way. I mean, I don't want to be accusing anybody of anything.
A random rolled up wad of bills.
Maybe he did. He was like, look what I've got. Look what I found. I'll go to Florida.
He immediately confesses. He's like, I did. I'm a wanted man. I'm tired of running. I can't take it anymore. I murdered Bobby and Merritt.
And they should have said, dude, we didn't even know where you were.
Like, we were
you're so dumb.
Oh, goodness me. He tells investigators that he had bound Marilyn's hands and ordered Bobby to open the safe, which he knew had about $20,000 in it.
Mm-hmm.
Marilyn lunged at Jeremy, and when she moved like that, he shot her in the chest.
Okay.
So she falls to the ground. Bobby has opened the safe, and he's no longer needed. So he takes the gun and shoots Bobby in the back of the head, loads all the money up from the safe into whatever he loads it in. And as he's leaving, he hears Marilyn crying. So he shoots her and kills her because he's just that kind of guy.
And Marilyn is Rodney's wife.
Marilyn is Bobby's
oldest daughter.
Marilyn is Bobby's wife. This is the mom and the dad.
Oh, yeah. So he shot Marilyn.
The mom and dad have been, Marilyn got shot first.
And then he shot Bobby, and then he heard Marilyn crying, and he's like, I'll just shoot her and put her out of her misery.
Right.
Or I can't leave any witnesses.
Correct.
Okay, but how did Bobby get tape on his eyes?
He had it on his mouth.
Oh, I thought it was on his eyeballs.
On his mouth.
Okay, gotcha.
So, unfortunately for the two of them, they both had duct tape on their mouth.
Yeah.
Marilyn also had it on her hands.
Okay.
She couldn't move, or she could move, but she couldn't do anything with her hands. Bobby watched Marilyn get shot, and then Marilyn didn't die.
So she watched Bobby get shot.
Right. And then it was just, it's not nice. That's just terrible.
I mean, I don't want to go accusing anybody of anything based on their past. I'm just saying.
Well, he's confessed to the murder.
I see that.
He has confessed to the murder, and he said, I ditched the truck, caught a bus, and I crisscrossed across the country. Crisscrossed across the country. Yes, crisscrossed. I did crisscross applesauce.
I don't think you did.
And then he says, but you know, it wasn't my idea.
I knew it. I knew it. I knew it.
He said, actually, my buddy Rodney hired me to murder Bobby and Marilyn. Truth be told,
I was supposed to murder the other two.
Originally, it was going to be all four of them, right?
Yeah, because then his wife gets the life insurance.
Exactly. The policy, the payout would go to Jamie if everyone else was dead.
What a shafizzle head.
Now, Jeremy said he and Rodney had met, they had met a few years ago on the dog fighting circuit.
Oh, that's reputable. Dog fighting.
Yeah. They got to talking, and eventually they hatched a plan to kill the Bluers. He had even moved into the trailer that Jamie and Rodney had because they were plotting this thing. And see, Rodney and Jamie lived on Bobby and Marilyn's property in Missouri. They had like a big piece of land.
Oh. And these so that wasn't enough that he's living, on his in-laws' property. No, I need to murder and have them murdered so that we get more money.
Right. All right. I'm going to put that on the back burner. Now, Jeremy, he takes a plea deal to stay off of death row.
Good for him.
Right?
Because he squealed.
But police go and investigate the property where Rodney and Jamie live, and they find the shell casings that match the gun that was used to murder Bobby and Marilyn. Mm-hmm. So they charge Rodney with first degree murder.
Good.
Rodney's attorney was a good attorney because he said everything that Jeremy said should be considered hearsay, and he should not be allowed to testify against my client.
Why is it hearsay? The conversations between the two of them. You not hearsay, I thought, is when you overhear a conversation between two people.
I don't know, but the judge bought it.
No.
And Jeremy was not allowed to testify at Rodney's trial.
What the mothership is going on?
Fortunately, there was enough evidence to convict Rodney. Because also Jamie and Rodney were having some serious money problems. And I guess Rodney could not keep his mouth shut about murdering his in-laws. He told everybody. That's what he said. Like, I'm just going to kill him. I'm going to murder him.
Did he tell his wife?
We'll get to her in a minute.
She's on my nerves. Mm-hmm. She's on my nerves right now, real bad.
Mm-hmm. All right. Jeremy gets sentenced to life without the possibility of parole for his part in the murders. And then just as a little follow-up, Mr. Charming in 2007 got himself another life sentence for murdering a fellow inmate. So,
and who was that did that?
That's Jeremy.
I mean, I don't want to judge anybody on their past or anything.
You're right.
But I'm just saying, I've seen that coming a mile away.
Rodney was found guilty of two counts of first-degree murder, and he's sentenced to life.
In Iowa. Okay.
Yes. Now, Jeremy had been following Rodney's trial very closely, and he knew there was another person involved in the Bluers murder.
Say it was Marilyn.
And that was Jamie. Marilyn was the mother. She's dead. You've got to let her go.
I can't let Marilyn go.
Marilyn has passed.
She has passed.
She has passed. She and her husband.
It was Jamie.
Passed. It's Jamie, the girl the boy name.
Jamie. And Rodney.
Yes.
I knew those two right together.
Trouble.
Because the two names right there.
Trouble.
Bad.
Trouble.
Damn it.
Now, Jeremy managed to get the ear of a federal prosecutor in Iowa. And he said, I'd like to make a deal in exchange for giving you some information about Jamie's involvement in her parents' murder. See, old Jeremy was behind bars in state prison.
Yeah.
Okay? Well, he wanted to go to federal prison.
It's a little cushier.
Because federal prison's got better food and their library is better.
Yeah.
Got better books.
It's more resources.
A better situation.
We've seen that. We've seen that.
And he said, if I'm going to spend the rest of my life in prison anyway, you may as well make it nice.
Yes, absolutely.
And the federal prosecutor said, show me what you got.
Yeah.
Well, he and Jamie had been writing letters because they had been having an affair.
What a twit.
Oh, my goodness.
This girl is a twit.
Oh, right. Yes.
Oh, my gosh.
Yes.
Oh,
Now, she had testified on her husband Rodney's
behalf. On his behalf.
At his trial. Okay. On his behalf. She testified on his behalf saying he did. There's no way he was involved in the plot to kill my parents. Knowing full well.
That she was involved too?
Yes.
So she knew the whole deal.
He actually lied on the stand and tried to involve her 18-year-old brother.
Are you kidding?
She made up a lie about the 18-year-old brother, yes.
It wasn't enough that you orphaned your siblings. Now you're going to try to get them roped in for the murder?
Correct.
Oh, my God.
Jeremy's got the letters, and guess what? He gets to testify on at her trial.
Well, that's good.
So they arrest old Jamie. She goes to trial, and she's found guilty of two counts of first-degree murder.
Good.
And she is also sentenced to life in prison. Jeremy was, in fact, transferred to a federal prison.
Okay.
I did read where Bo and Jada tried to continue on with the thing, but it got to be too hard for Bo. I think Jada since picked it up. I don't know if she continues to do it.
Oh, bless her heart. Gosh.
But yeah, I feel really bad for Rodney and Jada and Jamie's children because they were orphaned.
Yeah.
They lost their grandparents. Hmm. Then they lost both of their parents because they're idiots.
Yeah.
And I don't even know what kind of relationship, if there's a relationship to be had between those children and Jada and Bo, because there was
a relationship.
I know. There was such animosity and hatred.
I can't imagine.
Once they found out that their sister was involved in this plot.
And then she tried to get Bo in trouble.
Yeah.
When he's the one that found the bodies.
Yes. And Rodney had made up some cockamamie story about how saying that Bobby had molested one of the kids.
What?
And he told Jeremy this, and Jeremy had in fact been molested as a kid, which is why he was like, oh, no problem. I don't have any problem killing him.
Are you kidding?
Which is why he shot him in the back of the head. He didn't have, yeah. And he was also told that Marilyn knew about it and was covering it up, so he didn't have a problem killing her. All turned out to be a lie.
Oh.
They were a very, very loving, giving family.
And they raised a monster.
They had
a married a monster, and they befriended a monster.
Yeah. That's what happened there in Iowa. It was the first ever murder at the Iowa State Fair. I don't believe there's been one since.
I don't imagine not.
But can you imagine being a police officer and getting word that there's been a murder at the Iowa State Fair and realizing 80,000 people walked through the gate that day?
Yeah.
80,000 suspects.
You do. You really do.
Lord of mercy.
It's a lot. Well, RIP Marilyn, then yes. Bobby.
Yes.
So now we're going to have a little bit of Terry, me, and Sue.
Yeah. So all three. I love the layers.
Yes.
I'm very excited about it. Well, that's delicious.
Mm-hmm. That's good.
Well done, sugar.
Thank you so much.
You could be Italian.
I think I am.
I think you're part Italian.
I'm El Carino.
Is that Italian?
I don't know. What do Italians say?
I don't know. Ciao, Bella.
Pizzeria.
There you are. That's the one.
My name is Karen Rhea.
Oh, my goodness. Another hit in the kitchen. Way to go.
Oh, yeah. Guys, this was super easy.
Delicious.
And even though it's a chilled dessert, I feel like you could have this in the summer or the winter.
Oh, definitely.
Because of the coffee has a real warming, deep flavor.
Yes, we will eat desserts any time of the year. It does not matter to us. We are not particular.
That's the God's honest truth. It really is.
All right. Well, that's another episode of Sugar Coated Murder Podcast.
Oh, my gosh. Look at us cranking them out. It's still March. It's still my birthday month. Everybody, send me a gift.
I don't want anybody to get too excited, but we've started writing our second book. What?
She just dropped a bombshell. Oh, my gosh. What did you say? Oh, now the pressure's on.
I can't take it back.
You can't. Well, we can edit it out, actually. But anyway.
We're editing it out. We're so excited.
I know.
We're rolling through it.
We are rolling through it.
Because
so.
We are professionals.
Something like that.
With the number one murder baking podcast in Charleston, South Carolina.
Number one, guys. We're number
That's
one.
Us.
We are your number one.
I mean, we are the only one.
Murder podcast from South Carolina. I'm just saying we are your number one, and we are happy to be your number one.
Indeed.
All right, guys. Well, I'm going to tell you something right now. Keep your head on a friggin' swivel.
Yes, it's dangerous out there.
Yeah.
Make sure you're safe. Please be safe.
Yes, definitely. You definitely should.
And stay sweet.
Don't murder,
because if you kill people,
we will talk about you.
This has been Sugar Coated Murder Podcast, a deliciously entertaining true crime podcast. Like what you heard? You can always explore past episodes by visiting sugarcoatedpod.com. Don't forget to like our Facebook fan page and share with friends. Thanks for listening to Sugar Coated Murder Podcast.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.